ongoing change, neither holding to self nor other than self, just this moment. That's our life. And yet we often find we are not so. Then there is stress, dissatisfaction, difficulties, suffering. We use all sorts of addictive behaviors to keep us from this just moment, ongoing change, neither self nor other than self. So, to explore this, the following is a useful analogy. So, I'll read a little bit. This is about a handheld, long endurance, unmanned aerial system. In other words, a robotic glider. It's called Talius. So, when Talius encounters a thermal, it senses the lift and spirals around to take advantage of it. Vultures and eagles use the same technique, and those in charge of this Talius project have often found that the Talius glider sharing the air with these raptors. On some occasions, the birds found that the thermals that they were attempting to join were too weak for their weight. And yet the drone, the robotic glider, was more efficient at gliding than they are and able to join the thermal. Joining the thermal means coming into the thermal stream and using it to go up. Talius's endurance is limited only by the power requirement of its electronics and payload, since it itself has to sense where the thermal is and do what the slight maneuvers to enter it. At the moment, they're battery powered, but there are plans to replace the current batteries with lithium ion ones capable of storing enough solar energy to last through the night. And when that happens, the Talius will be able to stay aloft indefinitely by itself. In other words, there isn't anyone on the ground or anywhere else guiding it. It, the electronic sensing device, can sense the currents. Talius does, however, depend on chance to locate useful thermals in the first place. In other words, in some air there aren't very many thermals at all, and once you launch it, it might not find any. But there's a more ambitious scheme for a robotic glider. They call it an artificial albatross. Like its natural counterpart, this artificial bird harnesses wind shear, that's the difference in wind speed at different heights, in a technique called dynamic soaring. The air that is quite still near the surface of a sea, for instance, even when it is blowing strongly just a few meters above it. So an albatross can rise to gain height like a kite in a breeze, then glide down in any direction. By repeating this trick, it can fly thousands of kilometers without flapping wings. And by tacking, it can travel anywhere, regardless of the wind direction. There are hopes to replicate this with a robot bird. if it is possible, it will break all records for the time a heavier-than-air artifact has stayed aloft. Yeah. That's from a article in a Technology Quarterly section in The Economist in March 2013. Now, this discussion of glider is an analogy that's can help us clarify our life practice of this moment. I would say this moment riding the currents of life, the body-mind world that is our life to the best of our ability. See, in the midst of arising, passing circumstances and conditions. Arising, passing circumstances and conditions means inside, outside. Sensing what the currents are and being present, responding skillfully and appropriately. That's exactly what practice is. Doing so energizes and nurtures us. But when we hold on to self-centeredness, we don't even begin to see this. See, truly, we are never separate from the thermals of life. We and the cause and effect thermals are not two. See, so nothing extra is needed, nothing special. Yet, when it's not so for us, because when we are caught up in attachment, clinging, then maybe this analogy of thermals and robotics and gliding might be something that help us clarify what we need to do in order to be able to glide in this moment, cause and effect thermals. So, what's important is what weighs us down and hinders us from being this moment, cause and effect thermals, being able to freely soar. It's always in the specifics of this moment, see? But in general, we can say what weighs us down and hinders us is what we hold on to and are attached to. See, literally, hold on to and attach to. Even though we can't point to it in physical sense some of the time, we can point to it in lots of ways. So, what are they? It's body-mind stories of what should or should not. Stories of self or other, both of those fictional stories. Stories of past, present, future. See, that's what we hold to. And the resulting reactive habits to those keep us from responding to the currents of this moment, cause and effect, which is all we are. We're not inside this bag of skin and bones, but we are just these current of cause and effect manifesting right now, except when we believe we're not. It keeps us from responding, from being supported and flowing with the currents of the thermals and up and down drafts of this moment, cause and effect. Do we complain about the way updrafts, air currents, and thermals are? Or, if I say it differently, do we complain about cause and effect manifesting right now? Are we angry at how others are? Arguing, whether internally or externally, with what is not supposed to be, not supposed to happen? Do we protest in various ways with why this, why now, why me? Do we use phrases and variants like that? Is it useful? Is it useful in our life? If we would ask differently, would it be useful for a bird that's soaring, an eagle, a raptor of another sort, a vulture, if it would complain and be caught up in judgment while it is riding the air currents. Would that help it? Imagine. Of what use is it for us? Does it help or hinder riding the thermals of the moment? See, that's a question. Of course, there are currents that we, or a bird, prefer. But does holding on to that preference, other than either accepting or declining a thermal, a wind current, does holding on to that preference and reacting from that holding on, becoming upset, angry, or even thrilled, and does that hinder or assist in riding that, whether for a bird or for us, when that is the current that is here? We can't respond and maneuver skillfully, just as the glider or the bird, if we are weighed down by clinging to preferences. And what happens is we do things unskillfully and we have harm, stress, suffering. See? You've all heard the expression stepping from a 100-foot pole as a description of practice. Yet you know very well you can't step from a 100-foot pole if you hold on to it, are attached to it, are attached to fear or to complaints. And yet that's our life. Stepping from a 100-foot pole. Moment, moment, moment. And yet the clinging hinders us. So what's helpful? Being clear of intention. That's compassion. That's serving. See? That includes the willingness to see and experience attachments and self-centeredness. Willingness to experience what weighs us down. As much as we don't stick there, we can ride the thermals and currents of this life, of your life. See, there are thermals and currents of your life. You just remember, this is an analogy, but it's an analogy that I'm using to maybe assist us to see what we do and what is helpful to do in practice. See, our life is being ongoing change, ongoing change, ongoing change, ongoing arising, passing, and yet not clinging to it or our reactions to it. In a way, we talked about this in the past 2 days when we talked about Buddha and Dharma. The sixth ancestor in China, Wei Nang, says ongoing change is Buddha nature. And we all say in the Heart Sutra, to clarify and remind us of this, not born, not destroyed. Now, if I say it a little differently, the birds and the robotic glider flies easily when it's unencumbered. And we fly easily in our life, whether on the ground or in the air, when we are unencumbered by various mind-body forms of self-centeredness, of dualism. See? So, when we are encumbered, what is skillful and appropriate practice is the question. What enables and supports us I say it in this way, to transform encumbered to unencumbered. Or, even better, what reveals the unencumbered in the midst of the seemingly encumbered? Because all of us tell ourselves that we're encumbered by all sorts of things. You each know what you believe you're encumbered by. First step, as you know, is noticing the holding to self-centered attachment. Just imagine yourself as gliding and yet holding on to this extra weight. See? And then experiencing the holding, the seeming weight, because there are no weights around and yet we hold them. See, that experiencing enables forgetting. Forgetting holding, forgetting self. See, and that much that as we can forget, that allows us to sense the currents of life, allows us to ride the currents of life. See, then we can be nurtured and nourished by the currents of life that is our life. That's what Zazen is. It's sitting here and being nourished and nurtured, flying while sitting still. And I don't mean you have to look at something magical and find yourself up in the air, because we're always flying if we allow ourselves to be this flowing universe that's our harmonious life. See, we are not other than cause and effect thermals. Never other than that. Except we sometimes forget it. See, cause and effect thermals are nothing other than our life. That means your life, however you describe it. And you can freely go in all directions. And even more. It's effortless. That just like the glider, it's effortless. There's a slight adjustment one way or other. But we are not limited by cause and effect thermals. We can make effort in the midst of the cause and effect thermals to manifest compassion and to serve the whole universe that appears as our life. That's what riding thermals is. See? Now, thermals manifest physically, mentally, inside, outside, all sorts of ways. Now, some of the thermals and winds are just too strong for us. Too much agitation. It's too stormy. See? And we need to be able to sense that. Some of the storms are inside. We all know when we're overwhelmed by the internal so-called storms. Some of them are physical, some of them are mental, some of them are bodily, some of them are agitation, upset, illness, reactive habits, if you want to add addictions. Some of them are seem so-called external, whether it's the actions of others, personal, environmental, societal. They can include things like praise, gaining something, losing something, financial insults, violence, conflicts, etc., etc. See, it's a matter of us seeing what's needed. But in order to be able to see what's needed, we have to be able to be clear and unencumbered in our seeing. Seeing in the whole body-mind seeing. And that's our capacity. According to our capacity, we do our best. Doesn't mean that I have to be like anyone else, or that you have to be like anyone else, nor like some ideal that you've fixed in your head. See, that's why even in storms our practice is neither believing our self-centered views, nor is it holding to beliefs and limitations. See, that's always our life. So our life is very simple. It's being this ongoing current, this boundless spaciousness that's still and present and able to respond whenever something is called for. It's not being top heavy. Otherwise you're like the birds that don't have the ability to ride the thermals because they're too top heavy. While the glider, which is spacious, is able to ride those thermals. So then we don't stop or stick anywhere. We just ride the thermals that are our life from morning to night, if I say it in such a way. I could say it from birth to death. See? So, in a comment on a case, Master Hongshi, who's a Chan master of the 12th century, has a verse, and the last phrase of his verse describes the life of this ongoing practice of gliding. He says, quote, "Carefree, a leaf sails over the waves." That's our life. Carefree, a leaf sails over the waves. Describes the whole thing. Could have just said that and skipped all the rest of my talk. So, okay. I will stop now. I know this is in some ways little different than the past 2 days, but the past 2 days of talking about the three treasures leads to this ongoing practice, and that'll lead to tomorrow's, which is the most difficult for us, the Buddha of the maintained three treasures, the Dharma and Sangha of maintained three treasures. So I'll stop now and see if you have any comments about describing, discovering, exploring the air currents that you've done. See, you've done this all this your life. We've done this all our life. It's just we haven't been aware of what we're doing. In fact, we have insisted that we're doing something else. Because we don't know what we're doing, we get into all sorts of trouble. Or, say it differently, we are stressed and suffering and dissatisfied in all sorts of ways. So this analogy might give us a little more clarity in the next moment of thermals, of wind currents that we fly in.
When you mentioned, when you first started to mention about the wind currents and thermals and stuff, I was thinking immediately about green lights.
About what?
Green lights.
Green lights.
Yeah, maybe they're timed, or maybe you're just uh-huh. in the right spot at the right time, and you get all these green lights, and of course, eventually you get a stoplight, and then you're like, dang, you know. and if you hold on to that and really get upset, then you know, it ruins your whole day. But that's the thing. You know.
Yeah, it ruins your whole day. It's not the stoplight that ruins your whole day. It's the dang. Yeah. It's just different current. So you have to... As long as we don't take this analogy literally, then stopping is another way of flying. See? Another way of going with green lights includes stopping with red lights. It's not an either or. Then we're not holding on even to the idea, oh, I'm just driving along. Nothing is in my way. See, red lights aren't in our way either. Difficulties, so-called, aren't in our way either. Except if we are sure that they are and shouldn't be there, because they're not me. Me is supposed to have only green lights. See, what we see outside is not different than inside. See, otherwise it's two. Our life is not two. Our life is not separate from the universe that we encounter. That's what we were talking about the first day. One body, three treasures. One body, realization. See? Combining one body, Buddha, and realized Buddha is all together. One body, Dharma, realized Dharma is all together. This life we encounter can't be otherwise, unless we insist that it is. Then we become encumbered by that, as you say.
Encumbered by our own stuff that comes up about it.
Our own attachment and insistence, yeah. So then you can't fly. Then you plop down. All of a sudden you're heavier than air and crash. Birds at least know when, I can't fly on this thermal, and they do something else. Flap their wings till they find a thermal that they can soar on. They do this without thinking. As I said, imagine if a bird complained about that the thermal was not strong enough, too strong, in my way, not going the right direction. Imagine how much that added weight would interfere with the soaring, with the functioning of the bird. Imagine how much that interferes with the functioning of our life. Remember, this is just an analogy. Don't go out at a zendo and stick your arms out and try to fly. But it is so. We step out of the zendo and we fly, even though it's taking step by step. Taking step by step is flying. We just take it for granted. It's magical, if we say it that way. How does this physical thing called my legs move? Because it's body, mind, world. Therefore I can walk, and the universe supports me. The world supports me. The earth supports me. See? The earth and I are not two. Even though we could talk about them at two, as two, and that's useful as well. As long as we don't hold on to that view.
Can you talk a little bit about how expectations fall into this, as well as addictions?
Good. What are addictions?
Bad habits.
Yes. Let's say it a little differently. Our addictions, we could say, is when unable to be present in the moment as it is, we do something that continues consequences of suffering and stress. Even though it's to us it seems like, oh, if I do this then I don't have to be here with whatever that's occurring. I'd rather drink, eat, shoot up, smoke, scream and yell,
read, run,
whatever, rather than experience this moment as it is. None of those things are in and of themselves problematic, except if we use them in a way that's not appropriate and skillful, but instead is addictive. You know, food's food. However, if we have to stuff our face as soon as we feel a little agitated or uncomfortable, if we have to drink as soon as agitation or just nothing particular arises, or as soon when fear comes, we have to scream at someone, or you fill in the rest. So that's addiction. To embrace and be intimate in this moment life is what we have the opportunity, and yet we, to use the traditional term, we thirst after other things to help us avoid this moment life. Thirsting after things is another way of saying addiction. Thirsting is the, in traditional terms, the second noble truth. Trisna, to use the Pali term. But thirsting, clinging. You know, looking for something that we think is going to take care of some imagined need and lack in the present moment of our life.
So when you're sitting for a, it becomes more obvious, you have a lot of anxiety comes up. It doesn't seem like soaring. It seems like something is unbearable.
Yes.
And you want to do something.
That's right. And what you do depends on your capacity, ability, and the nature of the anxiety. Now, if, let's go to the extreme, which I've talked about. If the anxiety is such a storm that you don't have the capacity to handle it, then you have to find what enables you to handle it. There are specific practices to deal with it when it feels overwhelming. But in a general sense, we could say being able to notice it and bodily experience it, bodily be breathing, is what enables that capacity to be in the storm of anxiety and yet soar in it. Soar in it by just being present, by sitting and having it arise and pass. Or you can have more specific practices. Well, as part of Sesshin, you lead bowing, right? Mm. One of the ways in our life when anxiety storms are particularly strong, when agitation is particularly strong, because anxiety has nothing to do with sitting, it's just one of the things that occurs, just like throughout our life, is to use bowing as a way to enable us to embody this moment and actually be intimate in this moment of our anxiety and yet not be overwhelmed by it to act in ways which are harmful to us and others. And you know, addiction is one harmful way of reacting to it as a habitual way, and we all know what that does. Now, I just picked bowing because that's one thing we could do.
So how would that work specifically? If you're feeling really anxious,
yeah,
let's say not when you're sitting, but you're just kind of overwhelmed by anxiety, would bowing be a practice?
Okay, very simple. You can have bow with an altar. You could bow just wherever you are. If you have the space and it's appropriate, you can literally imagine yourself with what that anxiety, whether internally or externally, or if it's related to another person or event, you could imagine that person there, or you can have them be there and bow with them, and literally just bow with the whole body, even though you're anxious, because that's something physically you can determine and decide to do and do, even if the anxiety and whatever other agitation is there. You can bow 18 times. You can bow, I mean, pick the number. You could about 5 times, you can go about 10 times. Doing that physically in both enables you to embody that anxiety and also to enable it to move on, so to speak. Maybe, or maybe not. It enables you to be there with it and not be overwhelmed by having to react to it. Because you're doing something, and you're doing something that, what should I say, opens you up bigger than the attachment to the anxiety. Just in the physical act of bowing. Now, you don't have to do it physically. You could be in the middle of a an office or a movie theater or a bus or wherever, and you can do it internally, bow, so to speak. It takes more energy, and you don't have the added advantage of the physical activity, because the physical activity is a help. It's a skillful means that helps us doing something whole body mind together. Helps us. Not only the whole body mind, but the earth and the space that we're in helps us when we do bowing in that way. Because bowing isn't just inside, but it's the whole space, if we include the space in that way. If we allow it to be there, you don't have to think of anything magical. We just have to be willing to have that be. Then we are supported by the whole space that we bow with. You could do it outside in your yard if you feel comfortable with that, with the trees and the whatever is in your yard, where if you have such a space. So that's one example. And in the Zendo, when you're sitting, you can put extra concentration into your being breathed. There's one way to work with it. There's other ways, but it depends on each individual, because we each have to do it according to our capacity and what we are able to do. Another way might be to chant something, if it's appropriate. You could chant the Heart Sutra, Bodhisattva's Vow, Enmejuku. You could just chant, Namu Dai Bosa, or anything else that's appropriate for you and for the circumstances. See, it all depends on what the thermals and winds and storms of this moment are. Sometimes it's so strong that you can't do anything except the simplest of things to just stay present and not be act out of it. So it depends on the circumstances. One of the aspects of as we practice is we start developing both a repertoire and a sense of our own capacity. So we see what we use and need, what would be skillful with these currents and storms and winds. And we also fall down, make mistakes, and learn that way too. No big deal. Making mistake after mistake after mistake is what practice is. Somewhere I saw someone, a quote from Dogen, I think, that the life of a Zen practitioner is mistake after mistake. Mistake after mistake. I don't know where I saw it, so don't hold me to it, because I couldn't find it for you. There was a hand and I didn't. Okay, one, two.
How about if it was somebody else's?
It's okay, one, two. Joyce and then you.
Well, you mentioned.
Or.
I spoke out of turn.
It's okay.
But what you said about bowing, uh-huh. And I've also heard just bowing.
Yeah.
Would that not include bowing to something? If we're overwhelmed by something, we don't bow to that.
You could bow to. You could bow with. It depends on what's appropriate, and what your capacity is. Just bowing is great, but sometimes the agitation about the thing, person, and circumstance is so strong that you need to bow with that. You need to include that in order to be able to, quote, handle the agitation, in order to not be overloaded and overwhelmed by it. That's our capacity to see what's going on. So you're right, just bow. Nothing more needs to be said. But the reality of some of our life is, though you hear the word just bow, you can't do it. It's not, you're still in a rage. So you have to do something else. There's 10,000 skillful means. Every tenth of the 10,000 dharmas we encounter from morning to night are nothing but skillful means, opportunities that are supporting us to be who we are. But see, that's tomorrow's talk, so but that's so. Okay. Yeah. Joyce?
I think it's possible to get addicted to all kinds of religions, but
you could be addicted to anything.
I'm going to talk about practice right now,
right.
Zen. So I was just wanting you to address that a little bit.
What do you mean?
The rigidity of some of
the what?
The rigidity and. So I've seen, myself and others substitute addictions, if you will. So that's what I'm talking about in this one.
So the rigidity is our rigidity. See, it's our holding on to. That's why I said you can be on the top of a 100-foot pole, meaning that you've accomplished all these things, and yet you have to step forward from that. But if you hold on to it, which is rigidity of various sorts, then that can become a blinder. If you don't hold on, then all sorts of things can be useful. And there's lots of things that are not useful. And there's specifically things that you might find that are not useful for you. For instance, we were talking about addictions, and, for some people, a glass of wine is no big deal. For some people, a glass of wine is going to lead them down, if you excuse the expression, the path to hell, because they can't handle even a sip of it. So it all depends on what you do with it. It's not the wine or the alcohol or the anything that is the problem. It's what you do with it and how you become attached, self-centered, hold on to it. So, yeah. It's we who make addictions. It's not things that make addictions.
So, I guess what I'm really asking about that is if you could comment on, what's the antidote? I guess it's more of the same, but...
The antidote to what?
To doing that.
See, there's different antidotes. You use the word, so it's a good word. It's an antidote to a specific poison, to a specific situation or illness or problem. So therefore, it has to be specific. I can say in general, the antidote is very simple. Noticing holding or self-centeredness and being present or experiencing. That's the sit in generality, that's the antidote for, but that's just a generality. And we all here have heard that many times, and yet we find ourselves still getting caught up in self-centeredness, in reactive habits that we don't even notice in the first place, till something's happened. So there's, if I'll say it another way, Zazen is the antidote. However, there's other antidotes that are called for other things. There's other supplements called for according to circumstances. So that's why it's always in the specifics. It's always in this moment of seeing where in this moment our life practices being this moment and seeing how we're refusing to be this moment. Yeah.
Well, I guess I have to speak as somebody who's been given a lot of bowing practice by you. In regard to one of my kids, she's not acting in the way that I wanted her to, or my expectations. And so the bowing practice has really been useful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the physicality of doing that that's not abstract or for me, and keeps the mind somehow a bit in check. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for bowing.
Good. Good. And thank you for sharing that with us. Yeah. We often believe that the problems are the others. They're not doing something, or they are doing something. See? My problems are only me. Never anyone else. You want an explanation, and I don't want to give too much of an explanation. I would rather say just do it and discover what's there, because sometimes explanations get in the way of us, let me say, benefiting, if I use it in such a way, because we latch on to that. And that becomes an expectation that again limits us. Even Zazen, sitting. We don't sit in order to have any particular experience. If we do, then that's something to notice. It's fine that those expectations arise, but so we all, to some extent or other, are addicts to explanations and reasons, and those all sometimes create difficulties. Even though there's no problem with them, our addiction to them can create difficulties. If some of you have experience with little children, you might remember when you tell the little child something or other and they say why, and then you say something else and they say why, and then you say something else and they say why. Sometimes we are why addicts in our life. Anyone else? So we're going to continue in this soaring school, all of us soaring, and even though here this is a controlled soaring, we also have to know that our life is ongoing soaring with, what should I say, less controlled winds and thermals, and therefore require us to be all the more vigilant in this sense of being present and noticing. We think sometimes, oh, in Zazen, in the Zendo, I really have to notice when I'm caught up and be present. Really, it's just the opposite. Here, it's easy to notice as compared to out, so-called out there. Of course, we bring out there and here somehow or other, but out there in the ongoing life, it requires all the more sensing and being present in order for us to negotiate the moment currents that appear as our life. Thank you.
Copyright 2013, LU Genmyo Smith.